Well, it may well seem that with 366 days this year, having one day to actually talk might not be too much to ask, basically. So why not have a time to talk day? Why is this important? Why is communication important? Well, certain findings suggest that nearly two out of three of us have been masking our mental health struggles with a brave facade. Yes, the stiff upper lip is still alive and well and kind of existing in the 21st century. To talk us through some of the challenges with respect to this and addressing this silent struggle, we're delighted to welcome from Mind, of course, Alex Bushell. How are you, Alex?
Morning, Alex. Yeah, very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, well, okay, but at the same time, clearly there is that natural politeness of saying you really want to know where do you go with respect to this, and these are the kind of challenges which I suspect I'm not alone in terms of saying, well, it's all very well talking about time to talk, but how do we engage with this? How do we actually relate that most human of activities and really connect with it for the benefit of everybody, really?
Well, here's my top tip, if you like, Alex. You just asked me how I was doing, and I asked you, and we both said, yeah, we're okay. Well, ask twice. I find this really powerful to give permission. It's about giving a signal to the person you're speaking to that actually have got 10 minutes right now to actually go a bit deeper, and you'll be amazed the results you have. So yes, today, Time to Talk Day, it's the day where we hope to have the largest national conversation around mental health, more than a million mental health conversations up and down the country. And this is my tip. Next time, if you're on the school run, taking your kids any second now to school, or you see someone on the high street that you know, or wherever it may be, on the bus perhaps, ask them, how are you? And then they say, yeah, absolutely fine. And then say, no, really, how are you? Because I think, yeah, and that moment gives the permission they need to talk about their mental health.
I mean, the research is, I won't say staggering, but I would say concerning. I mean, 70%, nearly three quarters of 16 to 24 year olds, 72% of 25 to 34 year olds, both areas admitting that they bottle up their mental health challenges. You know, there is this notion that, you know, whatever labels are actually used, whether it's Generation Alpha, whether it's Generation Z, millennials, and so on. Clearly, you know, there are areas here where people are having a lot of stresses. I mean, we know cost of living crisis is there. We still have the legacy of the pandemic. We've got potential world war on the horizon. We've got people closing posts, losing jobs, various other factors. That doesn't help, does it, in terms of that cocktail of potential challenges that we're faced with?
Exactly. It's all part of the mix that we've tried to unpack a little bit with this research. Let's break it down, if I may, in a few places. You mentioned there the figures for 16 to 24-year-olds and 72-year-olds. They are higher than what we found for adults. What we can say first off the bat is that many more of us than we perhaps thought are struggling to talk about mental health, putting a brave face on, saying they're okay when in fact they're struggling. And that speaks to sort of two different things, really, depending on which generations you're looking at. For the older generations, the main reason given why people would just put a brave face on rather than talk about their mental health was this idea of not wanting to be a burden. So, yes, you mentioned the cost of living crisis, you mentioned job cuts. If you turn on the news or the radio, it doesn't take a moment really before you're faced with some really difficult or upsetting or traumatic news in this country or across the world. So for older people, I think what's happening is people don't want to be a burden. And that I think is a really, if I may say so, just I think it's the wrong way of approaching it. We all have a right and responsibility to look after ourselves, to look after our own mental health, irrespective of whether people have it tougher elsewhere. And after all, if we don't look after our own mental health, if we're not okay, how can we be a help to others? Interestingly, and the facts you stated were absolutely spot on around the younger generations, it's slightly higher, but this is across the piece. So there is a level of not wanting to talk about it that I think we were really shocked and surprised to see. But for younger people, the reason they gave for wanting to put a brave face on it was around a fear of being judged. And we think, don't we, that younger people are better at talking about or articulating how they're feeling, for speaking out about what it is that's bothering them or how upset they are or what they need to do to help support their mental health. But actually, far more young people than we thought are still worried about the stigma of talking about their mental health, being labeled a snowflake, being told that they're pathetic, they need to just, toughen up and get on with it. So that stigma is still a really big issue, and a really big issue for the younger generations as well.
This is the 10th anniversary of Time to Talk Day. There is a little positivity insofar as whereas 10 years ago, 29% who effectively felt comfortable talking about mental health, that's now gone up to 67%. Are we seeing that positivity going, growing, developing, etc., or is it a case of we've still got an awfully long way to go before we even begin to see the light at the end of that tunnel?
It's a sort of strange answer I'm going to give, but it's a bit of both. We have seen transformative change, haven't we, in terms of how, as a society, we think about our mental health. Much more awareness and knowledge around diagnoses, much more knowledge and awareness around anxiety or depression, much more acceptance of people and encouragement of people talking about their mental health. But there does still remain stigma. There seems to be an issue around stigma, particularly for young people still. And we need to do more to do that because we know the research tells us, my own experience tells me that when you speak about your mental health for the first time, you begin a journey to recovery. And if you're not even mentally ill, but you're just struggling, talking about your mental health is one of the most dynamic, one of the most powerful ways of beginning your ability to cope with it, articulate it, support yourself to get to a better place.
Siren Radio is a community radio station. It's based within the University of Lincoln. There are many community radio stations around the country. What is it about communities in particular that actually, whether they're religious, whether they're broadcasting, whether they're collectives, whether they're clubs, that whole essence of community, why is it so vital and why are they so vital to people's mental well-being?
One word, connection. It's all about connection. We try and have wonderful communities up and down the country for our own network of local minds where you can go in. We have crisis cafes, we have talking therapies, all sorts of services. But it's that point about creating hubs, a space where you feel empowered to be yourself and to talk about whatever it is that you need to talk about. The NHS has a really helpful way of thinking about this, the five ways to well-being. They say the way that you protect your mental health, and let's not forget, we all have mental health. We won't all be mentally ill, but we all have mental health, and we should all do what we can to safeguard it, to look after it. Well, the five ways to well-being are give, learn, take notice, get active, and here's the key one, connect. So it's that point of having connection, not feeling isolated, not feeling alone, being able to unburden yourself, talk about what it is that's bothering you. That act alone helps, but it also creates that pathway for you to seek support and help for yourself, whether that's going to a GP, or to access mental health services, or just feeling heard and feeling less isolated. It's so important to connect, and that's why communities are central to that.
If someone's listening to this and they may be a parent, they may be a partner, they may be a friend, or they may be an acquaintance, but they are concerned that somebody they know is actually putting on a brave face and again having that challenge of, and maybe even when you're asked twice, they'll say, yeah, honestly, I'm fine. What's the best way to actually start that initial conversation, apart from, as I say, simply repeating the question?
Give it some thought. There are tips. If you go to mind.org.uk, we've got helpful practical, and that's a crucial word, practical advice about how to have that mental health conversation. But give it some thought. So if you go on that website, you'll see lots of different tips. If I could share a few, we've talked about asking twice. One of the things I think that's really important actually is about thinking about the setting of the conversation as well as how you behave in the conversation. Let me just quickly expand on both those points. I have previously, when I've been struggling with my own mental health, had conversations. I particularly remember one with my dad, where he sort of sat me down, stared me right in the face, and said, "Look, I'm worried about you. What's going on?" I found that really intimidating. My dad was a wonderful man and a very kind man, but even with that best of intentions, I couldn't open up in that moment. There was too much pressure. When I had that conversation, and I've had conversations subsequently with others, there's also a danger that the person listening feels a need to act, to solve, to make it better. That isn't what that conversation should really be about. It should be about a safe, non-challenging space where the person can open up as they see fit. And it may be in that first conversation they don't open up. That's okay. Have another conversation a week later, a few days later. Find a way, if you really are worried about someone, to keep that door open. And in terms of how to set about having the conversation itself, Yes, avoid that kind of looking straight at each other, walking side by side on a dog walk or walking through the park or sitting on the bus or being somewhere where you're not looking straight at each other. There's some kind of distraction is a wonderful way of actually creating a space where there isn't pressure to basically put all your cards on the table, doing a craft together. I often try and cook with my daughters, and in that moment of making a cake or whatever it may be, that's a wonderful space to say, how are you doing? How's school been? I know last week that you had a problem with whoever it may have been in the class. How's that resolved itself? It's a lovely way to give permission to create space with no end or start point and to take the pressure off by having a kind of activity to share together. But there's much more of that kind of stuff on the website for having that difficult conversation. And my last tip, sorry if I'm going on a bit, my last tip is think about yourself as well. Create some space either side because it can be really tiring and draining hearing how someone else is struggling. And it's okay to find that tiring. So look after yourself and create some space either side just for you to have a cup of tea and decompress a little.
Mind.org.uk, of course, one go-to website. There's also rethink.org, which also connects with respect to this. Alex, it's been terrific connecting with your good self. Keep on keeping on, which we have to do in any case. And we wrap up by simply saying happy Triple T Day. Triple T, well, obviously, time to talk. Take care, Alex.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.